Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome along to the Wise Men Say podcast. It's a return for myself after around a month off. I bet you're all gutted about that. Gutted in the studio, the Craig Clark's back with us as well. You're threatening this to be for this to be a regular thing again.
Well, I had to come back because I don't just come in after wins. eight goals.
Well, so now, is that it now? You've got it
yeah,
off
I've
you've got it
out this, your system. I need a draw as well, like in a second feat, innit?
Well, I was it'd be interested actually to know how many 4-0 defeats we've had since we've been doing this, because it seems to be quite a few. We've had a few of these implosions in our time. I mean, there's just three of us in the studio tonight. Rory Fallow is here as well. Like, we're getting the band back together here, guys, a little bit.
Yeah. Except Gareth. For Gareth. Yeah. Gareth's that one out of take that, and he that just didn't rejoin.
The fat dancer.
What, Robbie? No, he chose not to. Gareth, actually, Gareth's probably got an ego the size of Robbie's, hasn't he?
I think it's more like like Stephen and Gareth have joint custody of us, but we can only see like one at a time. Yeah. Like last week we got to spend time with Gareth, and this week it's Stephen's turn to watch
really
us.
Is. Well, we're working on it. Our lawyers are working on it anyway. But we'll see what we're going to do. Before we quite a bit to get through tonight. Before we get on to tactics and what Moyes, I think what David Moyes might be accountable for. I wanted to know what people thought just generally about the mental fragility, because going a goal down, I actually thought we played all right until they scored. I also think, and I haven't seen the goals back on the telly, and that is deliberate because I wanted to speak tonight about how I saw things at the time, so I put my authentic feeling across. We always see on the podcast about how people are always prepared to criticise defences. It was his fault, it was his fault, it was his fault. On this occasion, I think Gabby Dean's movement was excellent. I've heard he might have handballed it, I haven't seen it back yet. And sometimes I think you just need to credit what I think was good centre-forward player. However, we look solid until that, and then that's when the problems start, because we just collapse again. You need to be stronger than that, don't you? You can't just... I mean, the fans are entitled to think, oh, God, here we go again, because we've been seeing it for years. But the players aren't always the same players, and they need to be stronger than that, especially coming off the back of a 4-0 win like that.
I couldn't agree more. Like you say, they did all right for 20-25 minutes. It reminded me of the Steve Bruce era when things started to turn a bit sour. We'd press on to a team for 20 minutes, not really create any opportunities. Maybe a few long-range shots that went wide. And then would inevitably concede at some point, and we just never felt like they were going to turn it around. And when you think about it, those were relatively like halcyon days compared to what we're seeing at the moment. So if we had that problem then with a arguably stronger squad with a better mentality, it's certainly a concern now. I think the main thing from my perspective was the midfield just completely surrendered it. I mean, partly down to Romeo was absolutely fantastic. I think he bossed it, and the more he got into the game, the more they controlled the game. But also we just didn't.
Lack of options as well for that, Rory, because I think the whole thing, the midfield performance was symbolised by Gibson in a way, who I thought was very, very good, quite good for 20 minutes, looked neat and tidy.
He was bright, wasn't he?
And then he looked like a player who hasn't hardly played, because he hasn't.
Yeah.
But it kind of sort of went through the team a little bit, I thought that.
It's not surprising that Gibson did drop off a little bit, given his fitness. Obviously, didn't expect it to happen so quickly, but you're right, that is what happened with the whole team. And I agree with both of what you was saying about Gabby Dean and Romeo, both were excellent. I think Ryan Bertrand as well, they were really good. The cross he put in for the first goal was superb. Yes, Gabby Dean does touch it with his hand, but I couldn't see that at the time, so I can't blame a referee for not being, and I don't think even the players realised.
No, I just thought it was an own goal.
Yeah. I thought own goal or went off his chest or something that. But the team did decline quite quickly, unfortunately, from looking quite bright, and we didn't seem like we could deal with that with Gabby Deeney's movement, which is a bit worrying for me, because the two clean sheets have came off the back of playing against a lone striker who uses their hold-up play a lot, who's not the most mobile, but can win a lot in the air, like Harry Kane. You know, not the. I know Harry Kane's got a bit of pace, and so does Christian Benteke, but that's they're not going to run across the line like Gabbiadini does. And our defence was so static. O'Shea very much was in the middle. Dene was very much on the left. Corne was very much on the right. So Gabbiadini knew, running across that, he was going to get some joy. So if Lukaku decides to do that next week... And he is, I know he's got the hold-up play and everything, but he is a bit of an all-rounder as a striker.
He's pretty explosive, isn't he?
Yeah, that's got to be a bit of a worry. But, you know, Corne was poor, but before that he's been excellent. Mm. Looked like the player of last season, so...
Well, to me, it's the midfield. It's the for that first goal, I can't remember the exact move that led up to it, but Bertrand found himself in a hell of a lot of space to put that ball in. And I like Jones, but I think he did struggle. And part of that was Redmond was also very good in it, just in a different way. And I think Jones was probably concerned with Redmond a bit, and it was giving Bertrand a lot of room to exploit.
Mm, yeah.
That's one of the problems with playing that wing-back system, that you're sometimes going to have full-backs isolated either against two or following a man and leaving someone spare. It shouldn't happen because you've got the extra centre-back, but it can happen, and especially when your midfield's just not really... When they faded, and Dong did his best, I think, to get out to the right and cover a bit after a spell, and I suppose Larsson was nominally asked to cover Cedric, is it, on the other side?
Yeah, it was mainly on the left.
It's back to the idea of how you're relying on somebody as young as in Dong to do it all.
Totally.
It's the legs he has as well. I guess you could say, you know, Larsson, perhaps his age, and we know his legs are on the way. I think we have missed some of what he brings to the midfield, but we mentioned before that it was perhaps a substitute for Lee Cattermole at the minute, but you can't say Lee Cattermole on that side letting the standard drop, because he drives the side forward.
Oh, yeah.
And you just think, when we were on top of that 20 minutes, had he been in the side? I know it's all ifs and buts because he's not available, but it is a little bit frustrating, isn't it? We didn't have somebody like that, because I think Larsson would like to, as much as he would like to, he just doesn't quite have the legs to do it anymore.
I don't think you rely on a player as young as Ndong to
carry
Larsson, whose legs have maybe gone, and Gibson, who's not fully fit.
Gibson's not the quickest anyway.
Well, yeah, exactly.
I think that's what he's trying to do, is play him in that kind of Kirchhoff position, the deep midfield, try and get him on the ball and play make a bit from deep, protect him with two players who can harry and harass in front. And like you say, in theory that sounds good, and it did kind of work for 20 minutes, although Gibson did make some iffy passes that nearly played them in a couple of times, which was a bit worrying. But again,
it's rusty.
Last week, they're going to have to. You know, I was worried about them throwing him in, but we were also saying there's no other choice.
No.
And
it'll do him good long term, as long as he doesn't get injured again. It will do him good, because the only way he can get rid of some of that rustiness is playing, isn't it? But before we get on to some of the things that David Moyes might be accountable for, one other thing I wanted to know what people thought about Jordan Pickford's continued absence. I was very, very, very frustrated at Vito Mignone personally throughout the game. Indecisive, coming for the ball, making a decision, and then deciding not to go for it.
He does it
a lot. Make a decision not to distribute it quickly enough at times when the fullbacks are open, certain midfielders are open. Whether it's a lack of trust in them or whether it's a lack of trust in his own ability, it's an issue. Perhaps it's highlighted because we see how Pickford was good, how good he was at it. But for me, it spoils the flow of the game. And I also think that, you know, there were a couple of occasions when he didn't decide not to throw the ball out, and then he would just kick it aimlessly, and it would just fall onto one of their fullbacks or one of their centre half's head. And for me, it's an issue. It's a player in an 11 where we have a player who is so much better than him. And as I said, perhaps it's because he wasn't awful or anything, was he? But he frustrates me a lot as a goalkeeper. I think personally at this level we need more.
I agree, we do need more, and we have more coming back. I do feel for him sometimes, because fans, I'm not blaming fans here, but there's an atmosphere in the ground where people are like wanting him to kick it quickly or throw it quickly, then he'll do it and it'll be terrible and everyone goes off it. It's like, you've kind of got to accept he's just not good at it. I know it's hard to do that and it's frustrating, but he really isn't any good at it. The thrown out thing, again, I would take your point. He's indecisive, and I think it's an element of, if he throws that and it goes wrong, they're in, and they're probably going to score.
Yeah.
And I get...
Football's taking risks, though. And
I agree.
Controlled risks.
But that kind of risk is a big risk to make if you're not confident in your own ability.
Yeah, if he doesn't trust himself.
That's the equivalent of...
I agree, totally.
It reminds me of Cattermole in that deep-line midfield position against, say, Villa.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he would still keep looking for the ball, but his head had gone.
Yeah.
And he can't... He just isn't that... To me, he's not that type of player. Mm-hmm. He's not a Kirchhoff. He's not a Key. Someone like that.
I do get that. But I also think there's a time and a place for it. And in a game 0-0 at home and Southampton off the back of a 4-0 win, there are times when you need to make those calculated risks.
When the team was looking confident as well.
Yeah, especially when it comes at the, you know, it disrupts the flow of the side and it comes at the expense of that. I can't take your point, though. He sort of created this thing for himself now, hasn't he, where fans are almost, because like you say, they know he's not good at it, so they demand him to do it even more because they know he's not good at it.
And then they can get more frustrated with him. And look, you know, I think fans are just frustrated in general because he's not the only one, is he, who's got an inadequacy to his game or a failing to his game that's making the football hard to watch sometimes. To me, one of the main issues, which it kind of stems from that, I suppose, is the complete lack of pace in the team. And then not just in terms of running with the ball, it's just like movement and that, isn't it? They're pretty static. Someone gets on the ball, especially like Rory and I were talking on the way over about like Pienaar. He's a yard off the pace at least. He looks like he's trying to do things he used to do in his prime at Everton and play, but his body can't do it anymore. Players are nicking the ball off him. I mean, Romeo just embarrassed him, I thought, consistently.
Well, I've made that point, and that's something where we have to look at David Moyes and the substitution he made. As I've said, personally, I think at half time we were unlucky to go 2-0 down. So
yeah, we can agree on that. I think
there are a few things. I can understand why he's put Pienaar on, because the last sort of 10 minutes at half he was starting to get overrun. As you say, Romeo was getting his game on. So I can understand him putting another midfielder on to try and shore it up. A few issues with that. One is that, like you've just said, the person he put on Pienaar doesn't look like he can cut it at this level anymore. The game's too fast for him. You know, you can see he's a footballer. He was a Premier League international footballer. Of course, he's going to show some ability on the ball. But, you know, he's not up to it. Secondly, it's almost like we had those two clean sheets with three at the back. And I know it's quite a new system, but it looks like it makes that much difference to us now. I know you pointed out a couple of things where we were getting, you know, some of the deficiencies with Southampton going forward where we were caught out. But my issue is that playing four at the back, we can't keep clean sheets.
No.
So if you're going to do it, it's almost like putting Pienaar in is a little bit too defensive when you're 2-0 down already. If you're going to change it, put Kasri or Barini on. I mean, Kasri, we're not even bothered going to go there anymore, to be honest. But
no, I think it's worth talking about his performance after I continue with what you're saying. I think it is worth talking about, well, a few things there. Again, Rory might want to elaborate on this as well. We're talking about that change at half time. Never mind the fact that Pienaar's the wrong player. We had looked pretty solid, five at the back, or it would conceded the two goals, especially the one on half time is a sucker punch. But there was nothing about the system that made you think, we have to change this. The only thing is get another forward on because we need a goal. Mm-hmm. So I can understand, all right, you're going to make that change. But I don't see that it was particularly necessary. We could have had another 20-minute spell like we had in the first half and fashioned some better chances the second time around. We'll never know, he didn't do it.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. I was surprised at halftime to see that O'Shea came off and we moved away from the system that has been worked really well in the last two games. Even if you are 2-0 at half 2-0 down at half time and you think this game's probably gone, do a bit of damage limitation at the very least and just think this system's still solid.
Mm-hmm.
We've looked all right with it, like we said there, for 20 minutes. We might be able to get out of it with this, but at the very worst we're not going to get murdered having this. And it's a bit of a Sunday League thing, I think. Take a defender off.
Steve Bruce.
And keep just putting attackers on.
Steve Bruce-esque.
Yeah.
But the thing is, as Steve said, though, he didn't even really put an attacker on.
Later in the game, when Kasri and Barini came on.
It's like, it's rash on one hand, because you're changing the entire
the fundamental
formation.
System,
But then on the other hand, it's cautious because of the player you put on and where you put him on.
Which just proves how little sense it made, really.
Mm.
But then again, you see Barini come on and do his... concrete first touch trick again for, for 30, 40 minutes, whatever the hell it was, and you just think, like, I'm sick of you, I'm sick of watching you, you're crap, you think you're good, you're not. I'm just tired of watching it. And I understand people want to see Kasri because they remember a player who did do some really good stuff last season. He scored a couple of important goals. He was very good at pressing and high up the pitch, but he was also, I think it's easy to forget, dreadful a few times, mm-hmm. especially away from home. I think there's a game
at Norwich
especially, diabolical. So he's obviously got an attitude problem somewhere, which has manifested itself fully since Moyes has took over. And now you can criticise Moyes for a lot of things, but he can't have that. He can't play someone who is... I'm speculating because I don't know whether he is doing this, but if he is unmanageable, Moyes can't sacrifice his whole management, whether you like Moyes or not, just to play that one player who looks physically overweight. I mean, his performances are actually abhorrent anyway when he comes on. Some of the stuff he's trying to do is just absurd and unnecessary. And I understand he probably wants to make an impression, but then if you think, I don't know if I want to give him that excuse, because if he wants to make an impression, he's obviously not doing it on the training pitch because he's not getting picked.
Yeah. So there's definitely stuff going on with Kasri we don't know about, and obviously rumours that he doesn't train well, I don't think rumours that he doesn't look after himself. You've only got to look at them at the moment. Did you see that picture going around of him arriving at the ground?
I haven't
seen
that.
In his suit, and it looks like he's bought it from a specialist shop. Like, it's that ill-fitting.
Bit of Jack and Moore.
Looks like Johnny Vegas brought the book around.
So say Moyes is justified in that then, and we all know the brain. He's not pulling up any trees by any means. So, and it does highlight the lack of options we have as well. There's no getting away from that, because where is your plan B? We are saying that almost just stick at your plan A, damage limitation, or try and get a couple of goals back, which with respect to Southampton, it's not impossible. We've seen plenty of worse Sunderland sides than that before come from 2-0 down.
A few seasons ago when we stayed up, come from 2-0 down.
Exactly.
Yeah, particularly
at home as well. And it does highlight his lack of plan B, and it's almost like we're getting back to criticise him for his transfer window dealings, as easy as that sounds, because we could have nobody like Anichebe who you can put on there, nobody like Wetmore who you can put on to get us up the field.
Well, that pace thing, it's the two pillars, isn't it, that will look good with four at the back when we had Anichebe on one side and Wetmore on the other, because they could both do the sort of two different things that none of the other options can do. So he's changed the system, which I think is fair enough, because it puts Januzaj in the middle, because the bloke is garbage on the wing. He's in the first half he wasn't fantastic, but he had at least one run.
Looked where, dangerous, didn't
he? Yeah, and he was linking upwards to four again, and that change in system to bring Pienaar in, it just completely ruined it, because Januzaj goes to the wing and starts doing his crowded out, which isn't entirely his fault, but he's getting crowded out and falling over, and everyone's sick of seeing it and fuming with him.
At the moment, our only decent attacking options are Januzaj and obviously Defoe. And I'm not saying our defensive options are necessarily great, but we've certainly got more of them than we have in an attacking sense.
Yeah,
so
true.
Keeping to that three five, which is pretty much, that's eight defensive players. Your fullbacks obviously are providing you width, and Gibson will try and get forward or whatever, but it's majority defensive-minded players, so there's no point really chucking them attackers on.
It's almost like saying as well that, right, like throwing in the towel in a way, right? This isn't working, let's change it.
Yeah.
And you think, but if that's the formation, the system we're going to play going forward, you're going to take defeats on the chin. We're going to lose games from now until the end of the season. So just stick with it and play it, and let them get used to.
Or if you're going
to
change
like
it, take off Larsson, who I thought was poor, and bring Barini on and put two up front with Januzaj behind. I can remember a couple of times under Allardyce playing something similar to that, where you had two strikers and a player in behind when he tried with the five at the back a couple of times. I'm sure he did it once or twice anyway.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it was perfect or brilliant, but if you want to bring that extra attacker on, or you could have gone to a three. I just don't want to see Januzaj on the wing. I just don't think he can do it. You're nullifying someone who is frustrating and inconsistent, but has clearly got something and can find Defoe in a way that no one else in that team's going to find Defoe, apart from Donald Love when he's lobbing the ball through the middle that time. But, like, you're not going to get this. Like, that him on the wing, you might as well just take him off. And Barini isn't really working on the wing. I'm not saying he's a really good central striker, but of all the players we've got left, he'll battle in the air a lot more than Defoe is. I mean, there was times when someone I don't think it was Mignone this time, it was someone else, pinging a long ball up at Januzaj, yeah. And he's up against one of the centre backs. What's he going to do in the air? Have you seen him play? You play with him.
it's a lack of confidence. It's an easy outlet to just go along in the air, isn't it? Any level you play football, but as you say, working on the training ground, you'd think they'd have something else. But this all begs the question, doesn't it? Is there enough in reserve? Because we're looking at the lack of plan B. We know that Catamol Hart, I think, has his eye on the Man City game first weekend of March. Kirchhoff, I've heard, is a week after that. Give or take a week or two in both cases, I think. Do we have enough? It's interesting. You tweeted out a form table today, Rory, from when we played Bournemouth.
Yeah.
Where we're saying it's almost like we could write the first 10 games off. We were so spectacularly bad. And I think that would be fair to do, even with the blips we've had, like the weekend, like the loss at home to Stoke, like the loss at Swansea, who are playing well actually at the moment anyway, even though it was the Bradley hero, wasn't it? So maybe you can't use that as an excuse. But you had us in 16th, is that right?
Yeah.
It's a slight decline in form, because I did something similar on the Inter the Light show about a month ago and we were 9th. Mm-hmm. So it is a bit of a decline, but at the same time, is it positive when you look at some of the sides below? Because Crystal Palace have found their level. Let's not forget throughout the whole of 2016, they were bottom at one point of every division's form table or something.
Yeah, they were like 91st or something.
and since that Bournemouth game, the bottom or second bottom?
Well, since then, they've picked up 8 points.
Right. So
and what have we
this
picked?
Isn't a this is this
and we picked up 14.
All right. Well, that's a 6 point.
Which is also the same amount of as Bournemouth. So there's a team who could potentially be.
Well, what's frustrating is
we've got Bournemouth.
Unless by the time you're listening to this, they've beat Man City.
But we've got Bournemouth. Yeah. We've got Bournemouth to play at home as well.
Well, yeah. What about Borough?
Middlesbrough. 3 points worse off than us, so we've picked up 14.
To me,
Borough picked up 11.
Two games there that scream at me in the period before that are the Borough and Palace defeats at home. They're two games where you genuinely look at, like, look, you look at the Southampton game and you go, right, we played well for 20 minutes, but didn't really test Foster though. They deserve to win the game, but I don't feel like Middlesbrough or Palace really deserve to win those games. And if we'd won them or even just got a point, it would make a massive
taking
difference.
Taking 2 points off those, as well as obviously giving one ourselves.
Exactly. It's so frustrating.
There's some encouragement there in a way that it's steady progress, but that would imply it's going to go right till the very end and you might be getting your nose in front. Yeah. But, I mean, we were just talking off air as well, obviously, because I've been doing Middlesbrough this season as well, and they've been sleepwalking the way towards relegation for a while, Middlesbrough, I think, because the last few games of a season, that we see it every season as a Sunderland fan, the last four or five games, you put a run together and you get three wins, unlikely wins, and I'm just not sure Borough have got the firepower to do that. So that game, I nearly said Arsenal Park there. Jesus. The game down at the Riverside is going to be huge, it goes without saying. Is there a worry we could be starting to get cut adrift? Because remarkably, we're not cut adrift. But we have some tough games coming up before those.
The crunch games.
Everton and Man City. Mm. We could be going in that running of decent games like Middlesbrough, Hull, Burnley at home, who are a totally different side away from home than they are Turf Moor. So it is keeping ourselves in contention or hoping that the teams around us keep being poor. Because when I was tweeting that form table, that's kind of the point I was making. Mm. As bad as we've been, other teams are still being either as bad or worse. Only team who are in that form table, I think Swansea were 11th, comfortably mid-table. They've picked up about 19 points, which a lot of obviously are recent.
It's almost like you're ruling them out the relegation picture now, which is remarkable considering the Christmas where they were.
The only thing, because the thing that you would have looked at them in question was, well, obviously the manager, Payton, he wasn't very good. But the lack of leadership, losing Williams, I thought would be huge. Yeah, and I thought at the beginning of the season, that's a team primed for relegation. But I think, Roy, you were saying on the way here, they do have a collective spirit, which maybe the manager's just a good fit. He's maybe more of a trainer, coach type figure, and that brings together sometimes young players, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, you look at someone like Alfie Mawson for them. Yeah. It's probably
that
an excellent example.
Superb, by the way.
But the marking from, I know we're getting on a bit of a tangent, but the marking from Leicester, defensively.
Well, they're in trouble.
Defensively, they look so much worse than us.
Where were Leicester on this? Did they below us?
They've
got big
them
trouble.
Them and Palace are the bottom two, is that right?
Yes, yeah. Then Hull, though, everyone's gone on about how resurgent Hull have been, but they're still worse off than us on that Hull, well, not current form.
There's only so far
span of form.
Hull's lack of quality can take.
I was going to say Hull have got relying on a bunch of players that have brought in January who smacks of a raft of players that DeFanti would have brought in for us in some ways. And yeah, it could work, but and they're relying on this manager who obviously has a decent pedigree in other leagues, but for it to be more than a honeymoon, it's got the lack of qualities that got
losing Snodgrass will still come back to bite them, and I think. Which isn't
Brady
necessarily
as well.
There. Yeah.
No, sorry, that wasn't their player, was he? Who else did they lose? Didn't they lose someone else?
Livermore.
I think he's a good player. Like, he's not world class or anything, but he's
in that team makes
big physical,
difference.
Solid midfielder, isn't he? Mm. But then, I mean, they've brought in Dye in, so that, I suppose what they're looking at is sell your British-based player who's worth $10 million and replace him. I don't know how much they've spent on Dye. I don't even know if they've bought him or it's a loan. But I'm imagining he's costing a lot less in wages and a lot less in fees.
It is that DeFanti thing, like trying to do the Udinese model again, and that's where
it
ends up.
In January,
it's
a gamble, isn't it?
But there's so many other problems there. Chairman's trying to get rid of them and stuff. Probably isn't bothered about that. Just
maybe
getting as much money in as possible.
So as always, as a Sunderland fan, the one thing we are building our hopes on is the fact that other teams are going to be crapper than us.
But me and Craig were talking about this on the way here. Like people say that in a derogatory fashion, but you're in a relegation battle. You do have to hope teams are worse than you. Fair enough. If you want to win the league, you can't rely on other teams being like crap.
Unless you're Leicester last season.
Well, yeah, actually.
Does Leicester winning the league help us last season in that they're going to be, you imagine, loyal to their manager? Because you can't really sack somebody who won you the league in that manner. But let's be honest, before he got that job, his career was on a massive decline. It was a surprise when he got that job, to be honest.
Part of the decline was arguably was getting that job because it was something that was available in the top flight. But it's not the kind of clubs you look at Ranieri's previous CVs, bigger clubs than Leicester, all you know, respect, you know, due respect to them, they're not a European giant, are they? I think their fans are in a tough spot where if we were in their position, like me and my dad were sort of talking about yesterday, you'd just be sort of like, I wouldn't mind being in this position if I'd just won the league the previous year. But I think it's kind of easy to say that. When you're going through it, that's not how your mindset
works.
Well,
all you need to do is think back to when Peter Reid had those two seventh-place finishes, and then we finished fourth of bottom, and it was awful to watch. I mean, there was one point I remember when we crashed that much when we finished fourth of bottom in the second half of the season, and we were going down Southampton. It was only Claudio Reyna who was grafting and trying his arse, to be honest. And people were saying that to us then. You know, look at where you were a couple of years ago, and it's not like that when you go week in, week out.
Karanka's trying to use the same thing with Borough, isn't he? Saying, look where you were 7 years ago.
Karanka's almost hit Gus Poyet levels.
Totally. I think he's got a lot of the Poyet about him in many ways.
Style of football and everything. He needs to hope Conor Wickham comes round to save him, really.
He's dead.
Yeah, I don't know if they've got any youth strikers or anything.
I don't think he even want to sign Gusted. In that press conference I was at, it was the implication. But he more or less turned around and said, what are you going to do? Pay £6 million for Gusted and expect him to come in and perform for you straight away. And I was like, oh, that was a dig.
David Moyes type thing. All these players we sign aren't going to be good enough.
It's just a strange one, Middlesbrough. I had them pegged at the beginning of the season as a team that would possibly just stay up. Just because they're quite solid.
They are good at the back.
But they've got no pace. They're so slow. I mean, we're slow, but my God. Like, and they're not. The thing is, you can get by not being quick over 10 yards, 15 yards running by moving the ball quickly. But they don't. They play that horrible negative possession football, which I think is infinitely worse than watching anything that, like, long ball.
No, totally.
I'd much rather watch something direct. God, it's
something
grim.
Quick.
Yeah, and I know who am I to talk, we're getting hammered 4-0, but at least when we do well, there's a bit of zip about it.
Yeah.
You know, like, it doesn't happen that often. We've only won 5 games, but they've only won 4 games.
Yeah.
That's got to come and bite them, hasn't it? They're not very good,
and they've got their best, well, obviously don't watch them every week, but their highest profile players in the Grado, who's a loanee, who's probably not that bothered. He'll probably end up in China next year.
No,
like,
he's not that good, is he? 100 grand a week, I think they're paying him.
Yeah, they're probably in that similar position where we always end up relying on the likes of Larson or
Catton. So for them, Leadbitter.
Does he not like Leadbitter though, or something?
I think he's just come back. He's been injured. He's just come back to fitness. To be honest, they're a bit of a muchness, to be honest.
Sure, I was actually.
No, they are, yeah. But when you look at theirs, like, they're okay. Yeah. They're decent players who work hard, but as you say, not much pace. But I want to talk about New York.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, me too, I'd love to go. Are you going to pay?
New York.
This is where the next live show is.
I'll take that.
That would be great, absolutely. We could have joined the players out there, couldn't we? Go on the same flight as them.
That'll do.
We did a Twitter poll that got 676 votes, so a lot less than
when we do
the Moyes in or out one. We get twice as much as that. And basically, I said, are you, and the two options were not asked and just hope it works, or outraged because these footballers are spoiled. 78% of the people said they weren't bothered. We did get some feedback saying, I've went for saying I'm not bothered, but it does rankle that they're getting almost rewarded for falling out. The FA Cup was one of the ones, and I can take that on board. However, I would if they were sitting mid-table, I would be more likely to take that on board. At the moment, I'm open to anything. If David Moyes is with these guys in the training ground every day and he feels that they need a team bonding session or break, then are we in a position to sort of mourn about it? I mean, people can use the spoiled footballers theory, right? But the thing is, we've all bought into the Premier League and the money it generates, and when you speak about let's go down and just win some games, and a lot of the things that people come back with are, well, no, because we'll suffer financially. So people do care about it. They might pretend they don't. So it's kind of that ship sailed, isn't it? Where you, do you know what I mean? What Peter Reid might have done by taking them to Manchester in 2001, it's 2000.
New York race.
It's 2017. Yeah. They're going to go to New York or somewhere like
that. Marbella or Dubai or take your pick. And I agree, it's not a reward. People have got to, I think, get that out of the mindset that any trip like this is a reward. It's, you can't, as much as you'd love to, because they're millionaires and you feel like they don't deserve to be, if you want them to win games, unfortunately, just, I don't know, sending them down the mines or something ain't gonna...
Send them a Nissan work,
Well, it did. But maybe he's trying another thing.
There's been small signs of that, though.
He has done little things like that. And if that worked... And who's to say this won't? It's a different type of approach.
It's just getting them out of the bubble for a bit as well, isn't it? Like, people are saying they're being rewarded. It's not like they're going to be, ice skating in Rockefeller Plaza and going to watch Hamilton every night. But what's to say when they were home here, they wouldn't be, going out with their mates or something like that after training, which is probably all they're essentially doing, but they'll get to see the Empire State Building and stuff like that, and it might generate a bit of positivity and, like I say, just getting them out of that bubble, something different, somewhere where the focus isn't as much like on Premier League football, because basically no one will probably know who they are. It can only be a good thing, and if going to Dubai worked last year, why can't
I refuse to believe Lee Cattermole wouldn't walk around Manhattan and everybody comes up for his autograph, though.
Maybe the folks he played in the MLS maybe they know who he is.
I think what would be great was if the support used this opportunity to shred our season cards, because we're so outraged that they're going to America in this time where Donald Trump is reigning supreme. I think it's a disgrace that the club is putting money into that economy. Obviously, I'm joking. But
I'm going to quote you on that and use that as the advertisement for the podcast.
Maybe
tag Trump in it.
Maybe Uncle Ellis knows Trump, and they're staying at one of his hotels there in Manhattan.
Bet he voted for him.
Wasn't it found that he'd had actually donated money to Hillary Clinton's campaign?
All right, well, I'm wrong. I thought, where's he from again?
Texas.
Is he actually Texan?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I'm not sure he is, I'm going to have a look. Because Texans are famously pretty Republican,
but let's
find out where he's from.
Let's not go down the...
Maybe he's got them a cheap deal on, like, the equivalent of like Ryanair or something.
He's got a Group 1 voucher.
He's actually from Missouri. He's from Independence, Missouri.
Okay.
Guy's only 56.
So did he vote leave as well?
Yes. His name is just excellent. Anyway,
small government.
Joking aside.
Drain the swamp.
Joking aside, like, you know, it's an interesting choice of location, actually.
Yeah, because it's not a sunbreak.
Yeah.
Which, and people say you would get refreshed at Dubai, for example, and the players feel a little bit better of having a bit of sun on the back, as well as a training camp in high temperatures and stuff. And it's very much not like that. I mean, Moyes even referenced that they'll be taking runs through Central Park and stuff like that. So it's very left field as far as a trip goes.
And I think I think people, you know, have got a right to feel unhappy about it. I don't think it's a reward, but I can see why that perception would be out there, and I can understand. Because when I was joking about shredding season cards,
what would cancelling a trip like this do anyway for morale?
Well,
if you've already told
I suppose them
to
you
go.
Could argue the arranging it in the first place was an issue.
But
if you wanted to take that viewpoint.
But it's almost like people are reacting to the Southampton defeat and saying they don't deserve it now. Yeah. But if you've already sort of made those arrangements, and what's that going to do for morale? You know, we're going on a team bonding trip to New York, right? Okay, no, now you're not. You're going to mope around here until our next game.
Or, right, we'll cancel it, so they all just book flights to New York and go anyway because they've got the weekend off because we're not. Or you get them in for double training sessions. They're all dropping to bits anyway in terms of injuries, so I don't see how that's going to help anyone. I don't know. I guess I don't really have a problem with
it. Well, aren't Everton going to Dubai as well? So then we'll play each other, and we've been to New York and they've been to Dubai. So it'll be like battle of the mid-season breaks.
It's interesting now that you do wonder whether this makes a difference at all. I remember actually talking to Martin O'Neill about it when he was here, and he was saying he did it twice at Villa, worked 1 year, didn't work here. Didn't work the other year. Spectacularly failed here because he got sacked a few games later.
Yeah.
Sam Allardyce took them to Dubai last year. It seemed to work. It's interesting. He cancelled Crystal Palace's trip there.
Really?
Which is it's fascinating. Well, you wonder how much difference it actually makes because if he would have put that down to Sunderland's improved form last season, he would have dug his heels in there and said, we need to go. This trip will do us good.
Psychologically, the group's different.
That's back to my initial and original point that David Moyes sees these guys on the training ground every day. We can joke about the little trips to Nissan and stuff like that, but to be honest, they were the weeks they seem to have a little bit of a positive impact. Mm-hmm. And if he thinks getting them all together away from distractions, because you can team bond at home, but you know you're always a phone call away from. Excluding yourself from the group by going to meet a mate or a family member, jumping on a train, going down to London or Liverpool in Barini's case or wherever it is, you know, and you can't do that. So if he thinks that is what we need, we've got to trust him, right? And then we'll just pan him and slag him off when we lose our next three games.
But I suppose it is.
How about doing that?
You kind of can compare across. Last year, Allardyce had these three January players who he obviously wanted, well, four actually, including Ndoye, like Kone, Kirchhoff, and Kasri.
Got a kill for Ndoye back, by the way, at the minute.
Well,
says a lot, but sorry.
Yeah. But he wanted to get them integrated into the squad, which obviously was quite tight, and at least play together for a bit. And it's a similar sort of thing. Moyes has brought in these players he knows already, who he trusts. He was obviously brought in because he thinks they'll fit into the squad. So taking them all away together again to just get that relationship going, get that bond going. You know, we need something. Like, it could be as good as anything.
And something you said as well, Stephen, it's something I thought about last week. And like Moyes does have that training ground. I don't know if he is, but he does have that, like, what you do on the training pitch is important vibe about him.
Mm.
It's one of the reasons that I will sort of give him a bit of slack about the Kasri thing. Because I think for him to just not even look at him at all, he must be doing something. He must be something rotten. Whatever it may be. And Ari, it is frustrating because then you'll watch certain players not perform on the pitch on a weekend and you think, well, I've seen him do it before. But there's just, you've just got to kind of, at this point, trust him because you get rid of him. I mean, I'm not saying anyone's saying we should get rid of him at this exact moment in time, but say they were.
I think,
who the hell do you bring in?
I know. And I think in comparison to other seasons, I would say that at the point that each manager has been sacked or resigned in previous seasons, it's kind of had the will of the fans as well. O'Neill might be debatable.
Yeah, that was a bit more of a shocker, wasn't it?
I would say on this one, I know people who say get rid of Moyes, and there is a little bit of that, but generally you feel like people are behind him, don't you?
I don't know whether people are behind him. I don't know what you think. Well, or people have just been beaten into submission. Yeah. we've just what else can we do? Kind of vibe going on. Yeah. I don't know.
Have we seen progress on the football field? Because I personally think we'll have a little bit. And I think, bearing in mind the injuries that he's had to put up with, we're just saying now we're talking about the game of the weekend. He can't do anything because he's got no plan B. Now, yes, you can ask questions of what he did in the transfer window and stuff like that, but no club's been unlucky with injuries to key important players like this as well. So no. I think there's been enough on the field for me to say I'll be prepared to back on whatever happens.
There has, and you can give him credit as well for having one system that worked that he's then had to totally change because of those injuries, and he's found another system that's yielded some positive results as well. So he's obviously not, you know, in those first 10-11 games where we thought he might be in a bit of a busted flush and we weren't really seeing any evidence of anything at all on the pitch, we have moved quite far away from that now. And I think it would be unfair, I think anyone who suggests that he's never shown anything, that would be an agenda more than anything. He does show things now. The one complaint you can have is, yes, he's a bit negative now and again. He doesn't G you up as much as he'd like to. But I think, you know, because we've had managers like, obviously, Roy Keane, if you go back further enough, De Canio, and even Allardyce had a bit of swagger about him, a bit of arrogance. So that's like a legitimate, I don't know if it's a concern, but a gripe you can have with
him. No one would care with how he was speaking in press conferences if we were sitting in 10th.
Well, yeah,
like,
exactly.
No one would give a toss. So I know where you're coming from. Because we're not in that position.
People just want hope, don't they?
Yeah, they wanted someone who's going to express a positive message. But as far as I'm concerned, as long as we get something on the pitch, you can say whatever the hell he likes to the press. But at the minute, we're not really getting that on the pitch either, so it is frustrating. But yeah, I mean, I don't know how much of the injuries he could maybe take responsibility for. I don't know what goes on in the training pitch, etc. But, like, you know, he's found systems that have worked for him, and then there's an injury. Or the one thing you would say on Saturday is, we're pretty unlucky to be 2-0 down, but the substitution was bad. The tactical change was bad. We didn't move the ball at all in the second half. We couldn't get at them. And then to concede those two goals, you'd think, well, it doesn't really matter anyway, we'd lost. But that goal difference is crucial.
You'd undone your hard work from Southampton. I think if you hadn't made any changes in the second half, we'd have just... And even, let's say, we do get beat 3 or 4-0 in that second half with keeping the system that started the game, I don't think anyone necessarily would have blamed Moyes. No. Everyone else would have probably picked the exact same starting 11, you know, just replacing Gibson for Rodwell. But because he's made some changes that were probably misguided, he's going to cop a bit of flack for that, but you know, he's a manager at the top level. He's used to that.
He's got to make a decision, hasn't he? Yeah, he's made a decision. I think it's hard to criticise him in a sense that you could say, yeah, for a positive change, it was quite a negative one. I kind of get where you're coming from there, Steve. But at the same time, you think he's looking at a 2-0 down at half time and think, I've got to do something.
I could understand it, yeah.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm not just going to go completely Steve Bruce and throw three strikers on or something. You know what I mean? Like, he's tried to do something with a bit more nuance, realised that isn't really working, and made another change. And I think, again, was taking Larson off was absolutely the right thing to do. He was having a bad game. Well, it wasn't at the races at all, and it got worse with the change of system. But again, the problems, as we've already discussed, were you end up with Barini and Januzaj on the wings, and Barini on the wing this season hasn't worked, and Januzaj on the wing, he can't do it. He falls over too much.
Great. Anyone else want to add anything?
I think we've been relatively positive in the main for a 4-0 defeat. Yeah.
Kind of. Certainly been a lot worse. You don't feel as... I think it says a lot that you don't feel as down as maybe when Crystal Palace came in and put four past us and Aston Villa put four past us. I think there's... I don't know if it's just because we've seen it all before. And
this is just one add to the list.
Is apathy's coming in.
Are we beaten into submission and acceptance, or are we... We've got out of this so many times before, why not this time?
Yeah.
You know, like...
And we don't seem to cut as drift as we have in other seasons.
True,
not at all.
Right, okay.
Cool.
We'll be back later on in the week for Into the Light. So thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.